out at the main lobster festival here at Rockland. And it's Friday, third day for me here. And I'm here with the scrimshaw maker, T. Cambridge of Ellsworth, Maine. And so tell me about this. What on earth is fossil walrus doing in Rockland?
Scrimshaw is the art of the whaler, so they started with whale teeth, which are ivory, and moved on to things like elephant ivory, but nowadays we don't want to use modern ivory, so we use fossil ivory. So it's woolly mammoth ivory and fossil walrus ivory. The woolly mammoth is 10 to 50,000 years old, and the fossil walrus is 200 to 2,000 years old.
So tell me, I would think fossils are very rare things like that.
Right, yeah. Well, at one point in time, there were a great amount of mammoths on this earth, and it's not a true fossil. It takes more like millions of years. It's sort of starting to become a fossil.
But the ivory is still ivory.
Yeah, it's the permafrost in Alaska and Siberia that preserves it. So it's really a fantastic material for contemporary artists like me who want to use ivory but want to be ethical about it. And it's saved the art of scrimshaw in some sense.
Well, I would say so. So is there a whole garden industry of mammoth tusk scrimshaw artists?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of scrimshanders in Alaska that take advantage of that. Hawaii, there's a lot of scrimshanders. And then, of course, here the roots are from the tradition of the whalers.
Yeah.
Which started in ports in Massachusetts.
Huh. Yep. So is what you're doing then, are you both carving and decorating them, or do you carve also?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the detail comes from the engraving, which is a fine metal point that I start with the engraving, and then you'll paint ink into it. Traditionally, they would have been using things like knives and things like the great big needles they used to sew the sails up with, and they would have used lampblack. And it was, you know, sort of something the lonely whalers would do. They'd do portraits of their wives or portraits of their town on the whale teeth. And it's advanced quite a bit from there. Many scrimshanders like to use color, advanced stippling techniques. David Smith is something everybody should check out online. He's one of the greatest scrimshanders in the country, and he does amazing, amazing stippling work.
Huh. And so is he using a lot of mastodon?
The best scrimshanders almost exclusively use mammoth ivory.
So what's the consistency? Is it like hardwood or softwood?
It's quite soft. We can also do scrimshaw on bone and antler. Mm-hmm. And but the bone and antler is grainy and hard, and the ivory is very soft. That's what makes it so wonderful.
Okay.
And before I go any further, I should mention that my father owns the Scrimshaw Workshop in downtown Bar Harbor. He's been doing scrimshaw for 40 years. And
so he must have hundreds of pieces on display at any given time.
Absolutely, yeah. He has worked from artists across the country. He taught me. That's why I'm doing it. And his dad taught him.
Well, as you can tell, it's absolutely fascinating. People come and when they... Even just putting that, the ancient fossil walrus and woolly mammoth, it draws them in, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Well, some people don't necessarily believe it right away. But yeah, no, it's a fantastic, interesting material in itself, but it's also this wonderful ethical option for ivory, and we can continue to enjoy ivory much in the same way we would if it were modern, and we can leave those animals alone and protect them.
Now, it looks like you're doing sort of medallion-sized things. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done a large piece?
I have, yep. I have a couple large pieces here, sort of medium-large. But, scrimshanders will sometimes take on whole fossil walrus tusks, and I've never done something like that, but it's quite a large undertaking. I've done a couple whale teeth.
How large is a tusk?
Oh, they can be anywhere from a foot to probably about 4 feet. A big fossil walrus tusk. Now that's quite rare.
They've never found it complete.
Oh, the mammoth tusk can be enormous.
I'm sorry.
There's a photo right here. You've got one.
Oh yes.
125 pounds, 35 and 55 pounds. So quite enormous. I've never known a scrimshander to scrimshaw the length of a mammoth tusk. I'm sure it's been done, but that would take many, many, many hours.
Right. It'd be rather expensive to sell then, based on all that effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, people, some scrimshanders still do whale teeth that they'll, you know, get in antique stores or estate sales. Mm-hmm. It's grandfathered, you just can't sell it out of state.
Oh.
The whale teeth are actually quite difficult comparatively, because when I'm doing the engraving, I'm working off the reflection of the light. So with the fossil ivory, it's larger. We can shape it to a flat surface where you can see it all at once.
Oh.
But whale teeth are incredibly curved, so it's this sort of awkward shape you have to constantly twist, and you're trying to make straight lines where you can only see a bit of it. So you know, you have to respect what the some of the work, you go to the museums in New Bedford, what the whalers actually were able to achieve on a rocking boat and by candlelight with a knife, you know.
Wow. And so tell me about the tool itself. Is it like a little point?
Yeah, it's a draftsman pencil, and what most of my technique has come from what my father has developed over the years. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a trial and error, and he uses a sharpened drill bit.
Yeah.
Traditionally, they might have used, you know, things like knives and needles. Some scrimshanders will still use a blade, particularly scrimshanders that like to do ships and such. Well, for the rigging knife, it's a fine point. But I like to have this sharpened point because it simulates, it's closer to drawing, as possible. So I can do things like stippling.
So it's like etching metal.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you've ever done any of that.
No, I haven't, but it's a crossover, yeah. You know, I say anybody that can draw, pick up scrimshaw. You know, you can do it. It's just like pen and ink. It's a little more practice. And
no, I hate to ask, where on earth do people get blank mastodon, pieces of mastodon type?
Well, my dad always says this, put it this way, there's no mammoth ivory store. he's made connections with just people over time in Alaska, and they'll go out and find it. Gold miners turn it up. One day we're gonna go and we're gonna find our own, because we've been working with it so many years. But during the summer, it starts to erode, and they'll just see the tusks poking out of riverbanks
you have to know where to look and what to identify. Even if it's just barely breaching the surface there, you'll be able to.
I can only imagine how wonderful that must be. We've just been working with it for so many years.
What kind of terrain are these to be found in? Are you saying it's places that had sedimentary layers that streams have cut down?
Yeah, it's places that things are starting to erode, where they poke out. They're probably 10 months of the year they're frozen solid in the ground, so then it starts to sort of melt.
Oh, okay.
And also I should mention, of course, we're losing permafrost every year due to global warming, so theoretically this will become a more finite resource as things start to melt and they start to break up.
My gosh. Now, are these, when these are found, I guess it'll only be in the La Brea tar pits, the ones that are found with much of the mastodon attached to the tusk.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's certain sedimentary layers and tar pits will preserve mammoths. They were really all over the place. And so the clean, pure ivory is what we have that's frozen. But you'll find them in benthic, anoxic conditions in deep water and rivers. And
anywhere that's slightly anoxic enough that it's not going to
break down, right. But the refrigerator of Earth is really the best place. I mean, they found entire mammoths incredibly preserved to the point where we can analyze their stomach contents, and we have all their DNA. We've sequenced the whole genome.
Now, can we assume someday an elephant's going to give birth to a little mastodon?
Well, it's possible. I believe Stanford or Harvard is possibly working on cloning. So, you know, once we have the whole DNA, it's sort of an easier matter to implant that DNA into an egg cell, and then you can start to develop into a fetus. But that's right; something has to give birth to that fetus.
That's so not too likely that's going to fit without a serious cesarean section.
They might be working on it, and that would certainly be something to see in my lifetime, to see a living animal with all this fossil material I've been working with for so long.
You know, it's lesser sort of thing, but I can't remember what I was about to say there. Sorry, I get distracted. But all right, so tell me then, if people want to get in touch, is there a web page? Is there some way to get in touch?
Nope, we don't have a website. We probably should, and we probably will. But I would just say, anybody going to Bar Harbor, check out the Scrimshaw Workshop, owned by my father, right on Main Street. He has his work and work from our scrimshanders across the country, and you know, he's been a dedicated craftsperson for for decades. He really respects the integrity of not just the Scrimshaw, but of other artists. So he has a variety of other main craftsmen in his shop.
Now, some of your work in there too, right?
It will be when I'm done here. Absolutely.
Oh,
yep.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah,
so
you can check that out.
Thing, huh?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I owe everything to him. That's how I've learned to do what I've done, and I wouldn't be here without it. And it's been a wonderful experience.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.